essence, continuing our Christmas series this morning, it's got a tie-in. Some of you might find it direct, some of you find it less direct. But is there anything, there's a woman who really was a mentor to me. She had a guest ranch in Arizona, Dude Ranch, and she's a person who influenced me because she's one of those people that believed in me. I heard it said a long time ago, we are not so much influenced by the people we believe in as we are by those who believe in us. And what I mean by that is simply people who take an interest in us and see potential in us when we don't see it, those people change our lives. A lot of times we look up to certain people and think, I can never be like them. And you know what? You probably never will be. But people who take an interest, well, Vi Wellick was that kind of person. She was just a very warm-hearted person who ran this dude ranch out in Arizona. Just have wonderful memories of my time out there. But one of the things that she said was, there's nothing that is so over as Christmas. Now, I know we've still got the tree up, but by next week, the tree's going to be down, the poinsettias are going to be gone, and then it's just cold, right? In Chicago, it's just cold, and the days are really short, and there's no Christmas to look forward to. By another week or so, the bowl games will be over, but at least we have the Super Bowl to look forward to. Oh, at least we have chili to look forward to, for Chicago fans at least. So, I mean, I'm just saying, you think the Bears are going to the Super Bowl? I don't think so. So, but Christmas has this way of just kind of being over. Then you're in the middle of January, and there's a song that's on a Christmas disc I like a lot. It's called The Bleak Midwinter. And just there you are. I remember one year, though. This was back in the day. I rented a townhome with some other friends, and in those days, we would have Christmas Eve at my dad's place up in Northbrook, and my mom would be out at the Dude Ranch in Arizona, so I would fly on Christmas Day to Arizona, and I'd have Christmas dinner with my mom after having had Christmas Eve dinner with my dad, kind of something that worked out. Well, I remember this one year, we'd all chip in and get a tree, buy the tree, and this one year I came home from my dad's about 11 o'clock at night on Christmas Eve, and I see my housemate, Dave, dragging the Christmas tree out to the dumpster. And I'm kind of like, wow, talk about Scrooge, like bah humbug. It's like it's not even Christmas Day yet, and he's dragging the thing out there. And I came in, and there he was with a couple of friends. One of them is running tech this morning. His name is Russ Munson. And they were putting ornaments in boxes. And I just said, you know, Merry Christmas. And I went to bed, and I'm like, what is going on? I mean, Christmas is over. They're vacuuming the carpet downstairs, getting the needles up. Dave drove me to the airport the next morning, and I said, so what's up, Scrooge? You know, I mean, why did he take the tree down? And apparently, Dave was coming back to the house, and so were his friends, our friends, Corey and Russ, and they got there before. I didn't ask you if I could tell the story, did I, Russ? No, it's okay. He just said yes. So they wanted to surprise Dave, so they jimmied a window and crawled through the window. But that's when they knocked the tree over. And so when Dave got home, the tree was knocked down. I guess I always appreciated that story. Thanks for giving that one to me, Russ. But Christmas is over. There's that sense of magic, that sense of anticipation. Like Mike said, there's the food, there's the gifts. And, you know, you always hear older people saying it's so commercialized. I'm totally feeling like one of those older people now. You guys are like, well, you are one of those older people now. But there's just so much stuff that goes along with Christmas, and it's just craziness. But it's over, and there's really nothing to really look forward to. I want to suggest to you today that the true Christmas story, it goes on. It doesn't stop. That it's something that happened, but Jesus set something in motion by coming to earth, by entering our story, and then including us in his. And that's the narrative line that I've been trying to give for this whole month, is that he's including us in his story. We're going to do a little backstory this morning. So if you have a Bible, you can open up to Ruth chapter 1. And you know, I honestly had a little bit of a rough time finding Ruth this morning, but it comes right after the book of Judges. And it's concurrent with the book of Judges in that it's during the time that the judges ruled. And if you know anything about the book of Judges, it tells us this, that it was a time when people, there was no king, and the people did what was right in their own eyes. That's chaos. That's another way of saying there was chaos. Everybody did what they thought was right. There was no police department, there was no king. Occasionally they had a judge who would come along and point them in the right direction. Let me take a moment and pray, and then we're going to read through Ruth chapter 1. Father, I believe that there's a story you want to speak to our hearts this morning. And the real point of the story is that we're a part of it. Help each person here to see that they have a role to play in your story. Open our hearts. Open your word to us. We pray it in Jesus' name. Amen. Let me just say this at the outset. I remember years ago considering the word ruthless. And I thought, well, what does it mean to be ruthless? It means to be mean. It means that you don't care about the consequences for somebody else. You'll do whatever it takes. You're ruthless. And I thought, well, that's kind of odd because there's this name Ruth. And if you look up in an old dictionary or just a newer one, it may say that there's an archaic word called ruthful. And that word means to be kind, generous, and giving to other people. The root of it, Ruth. So if you ever hear of somebody who's a ruthless person, it means that they are completely unlike this Bible character, and she got her name in the dictionary because of it. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land, and a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and two sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. Now let me just say this, that they're leaving the promised land and they're going to Moab. The Moabites were not the good guys. If you read anything in the Old Testament, you get that. Now one of the things I've appreciated going to Utah, because I love a lot of beautiful national parks there, and just outside of Moab, Utah, there's Canyonlands, and there's also Arches National Park, beautiful parks. And Moab is actually a nice little town, but it just dawned on me, here in Utah, where there's a lot of Mormons and a lot of things are named after the, you know, biblical things. You got Joshua trees, you got Zion National Park, you got all these different things. And then this one town, and I don't know what the backstory is, but they're like, we're Moab. You know, they're just saying, we're the bad guys. We wear the black hats, okay? We're not with the rest of these Mormon folks here. We're the Moabites. So that's important to the story because Ruth, you're going to find out, is a Moabite. She's not on the winning team. She's sort of like on that other team. The man's name was Elimelech, and his wife's name, Naomi. And the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. And they were from Bethlehem of Judah, and they went to Moab and lived there. Now Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. They married Moabite women, one named Orpah and the other Ruth. After they had lived there about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and Naomi was left without her two sons and her husband. Put yourself in her shoes for just a moment. There's famine. So you're a refugee going to another country. You bring along with you your sons. Unfortunately, your husband dies. Your sons find these nice girls who are Moabites. And it's like, well, they get married. They're supposed to marry people from the same flock, okay? But they didn't. And now your two sons die. If you know anything about grief, about loss, she was feeling it. She was going through one of the darkest seasons of her life. When she heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of the people by providing food for them, Naomi and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home from there. With her two daughter-in-laws, she left the place where she had been living and set out on the road that would take them back to the land of Judah. But then I think she did a little thinking. Then Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go back, each of you, to your mother's home. May the Lord show kindness to you as you have shown to your dead and to me. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband." Then she kissed them, and they wept aloud and said to her, "We will go back with you to your people." They're doing the right thing. They're saying the right thing. How many times have you said the right thing and you're praying, "I hope they don't take me up on it"? No, really, I'll drive you to the airport if nobody else will. Oh, thank goodness it's 4:00 in the morning and somebody else will take them. But what if they actually say yes? See, I think that's what Orpah was kind of thinking. It's the right thing. I mean, she's grieving and everything. She's telling me to go back home. But no, I'll go with you. But hopefully she'll resist. But Naomi said, "Return home, my daughters. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons who could become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. I'm too old to have another husband. Even if I thought I there was still hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight and then gave birth to sons. Would you wait until they grew up? Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters. It is more bitter for me than for you, because the Lord's hand has gone out against me. Now, you can say she's feeling sorry for herself, but she's got some reason to here. And she's just reasoning with them, just saying, I got nothing for you. I mean, I live in another country, okay? And this just isn't going to work. You stay here. You'll find some nice young men here. At this, they wept again. Then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung to her. That's why Ruth is remembered. This is why Ruth's name is in the dictionary. But Ruth replied, I'm sorry, Naomi said, look, your sister-in-law is going back to her people and her gods. Go back with her. But Ruth replied, don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. And where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if anything but death separates you and me. When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her. Is that a wow or what? There was something within her that just said, you know what? You need me right now. I get that. You might not even get that. But do you know, one of the things that God does for us in our times of greatest need, I'm not saying he won't bring you a new Bible study, a small group, a financial blessing, whatever it might be. But do you know what God, the simple thing that he does is he gives a person. It may not be what we want, but it's usually what we need. When Jesus was hanging from the cross, he spoke to John and to Mary, and he said to Mary, behold your son, and to John, behold your mother. From the cross, he could not answer for them the questions that they would have, what's going to happen in the future. So instead, he just said, take care of one another. Be there for one another. When God wanted to save the planet, he didn't send a committee. He sent a person. And that person is Jesus. And how many of us in this room would say, when we've walked through our darkest hours, that we have sensed his presence with us? And that, in that moment, is enough. Ruth was that kind of Christ-like presence to Naomi. She said, I'm going with you. We live in a world where people's loyalties can change in an Instagram, okay? With social media, their loyalties, their opinions can change. She made a covenant. And she wouldn't break it. I love what the psalmist says, that one of the things that's pleasing to God is people who will swear to their own hurt. What it means is this, that if we make a promise, we keep our word. We don't change it. But this isn't the way I thought it was going to go. No, but you made a promise, and your word is worth something. God is blessed by people who swear to their own hurt, and they become a prominent player in his story. So the two women went on until they came to Bethlehem. When they arrived in Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. And the women exclaimed, can this be Naomi? And she said, don't call me Naomi, which means pleasant. Call me Mara, because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. Because that's what it means. It means bitter. She said, just call me bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi? The Lord has afflicted me. The Almighty has brought misfortune upon me. So Naomi returned from Moab accompanied by Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, arriving in Bethlehem as the barley harvest was beginning. Ruth is radical and refreshing. She chose a path where she would never go back to Moab, never go back to her people. I don't know what caused her to do it. But she saw something in Naomi. She saw the hurt. She saw the need. And she gave herself to it. So Ruth says, here's the deal. I've got this relative. His name's Boaz. He's a little bit older than you are, but we need some food, and it's barley season, so you go glean, which means you go through the fields, and you just pick up the extra stuff. Well, it works out really well. And the people that are there, Boaz, you know, he sees her and hears a little bit about her story. So he's like, you know, make sure you leave a little extra behind for her. And then there's this whole thing about being a kinsman redeemer, which, you know, most of us don't. You know, this Christmas, we didn't probably say, this is my aunt, this is my uncle, oh, and here's my kinsman redeemer over here. We don't really deal in kinsman redeemers. But here's the story. In the Promised Land, they each got their piece of property, and it went by a male family line. And if you wanted to keep it in the family, you needed to have descendants. Well, she's going to lose the property. There's no way she can keep it because she doesn't have any sons, so it's not going to go on. So this Boaz guy is close to being the next of kin, so he could be the kinsman redeemer. But there was a guy that was closer. But the guy that was closer was going to have to not only take the land, he was also going to have to take Ruth. Now, I get the idea Ruth was probably an attractive young lady. But here's the downside to it. He's already got his property. He's already got his wife. He's already got his children. Now he's going to have to share whatever inheritance he would get through this. He's going to have to share whatever he already has, with Ruth's kids if he were to take on this whole deal. Well, Boaz is pretty interested in doing the whole thing. I think Boaz is like, and he points out, he's like, you could have gone after a younger guy. You could have gone after a wealthier guy. Because I'm not going to go into the whole story, but it's a pretty fun story where Naomi starts suggesting to Ruth how she can kind of reel Boaz in. And, you know, we read the Bible and we just kind of think, well, this was, you know, we get up here and we say, well, this was just a custom of the time. This is what they did. You tell me. It's harvest time, so Boaz is sleeping like where they're harvesting. And Naomi says, you go curl up and keep his feet warm in the middle of the night. And when he's surprised, just tell him who you are or whatever, but make sure you're gone by morning. Yeah, that's not a custom, okay? That's kind of like flirting, okay? That's pretty much what that deal is. And he's just kind of like, wow, you're going after the older guy here, and it's just a crazy story. So, but, you know, she listened to her mother-in-law. Now, there's a line here, because now Boaz is going to say, okay, I got to go talk to this guy and see if he wants to buy the land and get the girl, because I want to buy the land and I want to get the girl, okay? So Naomi says, wait, my daughter, until you find out what happens, for the man will not rest until the matter is settled today. So he goes, and everything works out the way that they wanted it to, and Boaz and Ruth eventually get together and sort of live happily ever after. As a matter of fact, they have a baby. His name is Obed. And Naomi gets a grandson out of the deal. And so at the end of the story, you've got Naomi holding Obed, and she's feeling better. Now, she lost her husband. She went through the mourning for that. She lost her sons, and that's unnatural. You shouldn't lose your sons. But now she's got Ruth, who had said in the story that there were those who came and said, she's better than seven sons. Better than seven sons. So she's got comfort working in her life. It's a consolation, and life can be that way. It's a nice story. It's a nice story about commitment. It's a nice story about how God works some things out, and how this woman who went through so much was able to give some coaching to her daughter-in-law, and that this whole thing works out with Boaz, and it's a happy ending. They live happily ever after. But why is this wedged, this little four-chapter tale, why is this quaint story wedged between the book of Judges and 1 Samuel? They're going through a shift. They're coming out of this time of the judges, and you start to get into Samuel. It's the time of the kings. Israel was going through a shift, and this was a real bridge between the two, but I think there's much more significance to the story than that. Let me just ask you today, how significant do you think your life is? Now, there may be some of you out there that know you're going to be a rock star or something like that, so you know you're going to be significant. Some of you think you're going to be a Hollywood actress or doctor or lawyer, whatever it might be, and there's others of us who are sitting here just like, I am significant, in case you hadn't noticed. But I think that a lot of us sitting in this church this morning are thinking that we live, at times, an insignificant life. And as Thoreau said, that perhaps we will live out our days in quiet desperation, wondering what the purpose of it all was. This is a small story. It's a great story, but it's a small story, but it's a part of a much larger one. Let me go back to chapter 3, verse 18. Naomi said, "Wait, my daughter, until you find out what happens. Wait, my daughter, till you find out what happens." Oh, it had a context that it was spoken in. But that is a prophetic word. You wait, my daughter, until you see what happens. What happened? Well, some of you know the story. Obed, that baby boy that was born, well, he had a son, and his name was Jesse. And Jesse was around and probably pretty close to the age of a guy who became the first king in Israel. His name was Saul. And Jesse had a lot of sons, 7 or 8. I forget off the top of my head. He had a lot. And you guys all know who his youngest son was, David. And David became the greatest king in all of Israel. Isn't that something? And who was his grandmother, great-grandmother? Yeah. It was Ruth. A Moabite. How did she get in the royal family? God's like, well, I'm the master storyteller. I can work these things out. But it wasn't just that she was anybody. She was a special person. And she made a commitment. She made a covenant. And she kept her word. And God honored that. Folks, when you make a covenant and you honor that, God honors you. That we make promises to God. Now, we shouldn't make promises that we can't keep. But you understand what I'm saying? We need to be people of our word in a culture where people's word, in essence, means nothing. This was part of a tapestry, a mosaic of a much larger picture. So what does this have to do with Christmas? Open your Bible, if you would, to Matthew chapter 1, the very first chapter of the New Testament. And you'll see her name mentioned there. This is that chapter that you always tell people, don't start reading the New Testament here, even though it's the first one. Why? Because it's a genealogy. If you have trouble sleeping at night, read the genealogy, okay? If you have trouble pronouncing words, try this chapter on for size. The trick that I've learned with reading biblical names that nobody knows how to pronounce is take comfort in that and just say it however you want to. Just say it the same way again and again, and nobody knows that you're wrong, okay? I've been doing that for 31 years. No one's ever caught me. No one's ever said, oh, that's not how you pronounce his name. If you take a look at Matthew chapter 1, verses 5 and 6, it says, Salmon was the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab. Well, that's a pretty interesting point, too. But that's a message for another day. Boaz, the father of Obed, whose mother was Ruth. Very interesting. Obed, the father of Jesse, and Jesse, the father of King David. Now go ahead and read all the way through. You got Solomon, you got Asa, you got Hezekiah. You've got Josiah. You've got the whole clan of Judah. If you noticed, where did they start out? They were in Bethlehem. I mean, that's where Joseph had to go back to because those were his people. And then verse 16. And Jacob, the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary, of whom was born Jesus, who is called Christ. One of the gifts that Heidi got, I think it was from her son Danny, this ancestry.com thing. And so I guess what she has to do is, it's a saliva sample. Yeah, you send it in. And they analyze it, and they'll come back, and they'll be able to tell you what percentage, nationality, all these different things you are. I've been thinking about it. I think I'd like to do that. And then I can settle once and for all whether I'm one of your people, Mike, okay? Because Grandma Glyman's maiden name was Abraham from Germany, and my hunch is I'm one of your people. I'll give her the gevelte fish. That's what Mike gave me for Christmas, gevelte fish in this jar. And he goes, but you got to have it with horseradish. I'm trying to convince him, why would I have it? So I'm looking for a Jewish food depository in Chicago and make a nice contribution in Mike's name. Okay. We love you, Mike. Yes. So, what does all this mean? Your world, your circumstances. What's God doing? Wait until you see what happens. Ruth is obedient to the degree that she understands to be obedient, to do what is right in her time. And not only does she get included in the story, not only does King David come through her line, she is part of Jesus' family. You know, we can talk about tribes and ancestry and everything, but it's really simple. She's in Jesus' family. Now, I mean, know that we get adopted into it too, but how cool is that? Did she have any sense of that? No. Do you have any sense of the big picture that God is weaving you into? You don't. But if you do the right thing, if you allow God to use you now, you have no idea the implications that could have further down the line. The ripple effect. Jesus had that ripple effect in his day. But it keeps going. And the Christmas story is still affecting people. So, we've got this Moabite who caused some things to happen that are just pretty intriguing. The commitment that she made to Naomi, would you make that to Jesus? Let's go back and look at what she said. Would you be willing to make that commitment afresh to Jesus? Don't urge me to leave you or turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. You know, I can't help but to think, it's not for everyone, but I'm proud of my friend John Kohler that I met 39 years ago, that he's in Afghanistan, following in the footsteps of those who were martyred last year. Didn't deter him. I'm proud to be his friend. And where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me ever so severely if anything but death separates you and me. Are we willing to make that kind of commitment to Jesus? Let me say something else. Because there's really only one other kind of oath or covenant like this that we take. One of the things when I do a wedding ceremony, many years ago there was a couple that I always tell them, if there's anything that you want me to include, I'm happy to include it in your ceremony. And they have a prayer from the Book of Common Prayer. This wasn't in my notes, but I keep it in the front of my Bible because I use it. I use this prayer from the Book of Common Prayer in almost every wedding that I do. I modify it a little bit. I like the last line of it. Grant that all married persons who've witnessed these vows may find their lives strengthened and their loyalties confirmed. I wonder for how many of us this morning that's a good word, that we just would say, you know, I made this oath, I made this covenant. It's not always easy, it's not always the simplest thing, but I wonder how many of us would say, God, I reaffirm that this morning. Nobody else has to know that, but in your heart you'd say, that is a commitment that I made, and by your grace, I want to honor you with that. Our culture has moved a long way from the kind of culture that Ruth was a part of. But even in that culture, she stood out. How many of us this morning feel that our lives are insignificant? But they're not to the master. They're not to the master storyteller. You could say that if there was no Ruth, there's no Jesus. Now, I know God could have done it another way. But one of the things when my life is evaluated in the end, I don't want other people stepping up with crowns to throw at the feet of Jesus for things that Jesus had for me to do. I want to fulfill the purpose he had for me. Father, there are people here this morning that are wrestling with different parts of their story. They don't get why the things happened the way they did. They totally identify with Naomi, just saying, just call me bitter. Just call me cursed of God. But you did some things to soften her heart. And you brought some things to fruition, but it took someone to break through and get close to her. Lord, some of us have people in our lives, and they may not be the people we would choose, but they're the people that are there. And you give a person to help us through. I can't help but to think that Naomi was probably like broken glass. She was hurt, she was shattered, and she was going to hurt you if you tried to get close to her. But Ruth did it. Ruth broke through, changed her world. Lord, some of us here this morning need to recognize the small commitments we make include us in your big story. Wait, wait, and see what happens next. Guide us. Bless your people, we ask it in Jesus' name. I want to invite you to stand. We'll sing.